Okay, part two. We're speaking with Ted Weiland. Gus, I know you're on the line. You're anxious to ask some questions here. Ted, this is Gus Breton. He's my co-host on usually on Saturday evenings. And Gus has been with us for a good many months now, and got a tremendous law mind. And when he started hearing some of this, he was almost wanted to hit me over the head. How come I didn't tell him sooner? I think, you know, I'll just get. It's very beautiful the way he's come around to this so quickly. But Gus, you have questions for Ted? Go right ahead.
Hey, Ted, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Gus. Good to meet you.
Good to meet you. What you just mentioned is Duane, is that there's many more of us. There's a lot more people that are running into the same kind of information, digging for the same thing. And I really do agree with you, and I believe that most of the people on this call have been digging for the same information. And just to give you a heads up on some of the people on this call, a lot of them are people that have been involved with some of the groups that are looking to reconstruct the country and get away from the attorneys that are in control, or to get away from, you know, one thing or another. We've all got issues, and they're all different, and we've all been looking for something that made sense, and we continue to look. And, you know, I have one question that I'd like clarified that I heard you mention on the audio series, which is, you know, the Jewish God versus the Christian God. But I just wanted to give you that, you know, heads up. There's a lot of people here that are looking for the creation of a new, you know, government system, a new, they're looking for something new. And this is their first exposure to what you're talking about. So on their behalf, you can skip over the, you know, the difference between the Jewish God and the Christian God along the way. But what most people are interested in that are on this call, that I'm aware of, is, you know, if you were to restart the country according to the Word of God, how would you set up the government? And that's pretty much it. Just start there and go from there.
Well, as a foundation in answering that question, obviously, first of all, there's a lot of those kind of details to be worked out at a later time, and there's only so much that can be said on that. And if I'm right, outside of God speeding this whole thing up through judgment or however he would intend to do so, if it is generations down the road, they're the ones that are going to have to really, you know, flesh out how this is going to be dealt with in real specific areas. One of the things we need to be doing is really familiarizing ourselves with the law of God, that if it's going to be, you know, I tell people I'm not bringing up my children, I'm raising the parents of my grandchildren, and thereby I need to be training my sons and daughters in God's law, so that if it is two generations down the road before people are ready to put this all together and do it right, that their training, I say you need to be training your children to be future judges. Possibly they won't be, but with the knowledge they have, that opportunity may not open up to them, but with the knowledge they have, they hopefully will then pass it on to the next generation, who hopefully will have that opportunity. Depending on how God all works this out. And the foundation where I would begin, at least at this point off the top of my head, with this question, Gus, is Isaiah 33 and verse 22. And I'm sure probably most of your listeners are very familiar with that, where it says, For Yahweh is our judge, Yahweh is our lawgiver, Yahweh is our king, and he will save us. In James 4:12, James wrote that there is only one lawgiver, and therefore anything that's not his law is a lawlessness. Man has the propensity of taking what is lawful and making it, I use these terms on purpose, lawful versus legal, unlawful versus illegal. Man has the propensity of taking what is lawful. God's the only one who determines what is lawful. Man has the propensity of taking what is lawful and making it illegal. And he has the propensity of taking what is unlawful, for example, as in sodomy, and making it legal. And throughout the book, I use those terms in that fashion. There's only one lawgiver. He's the only one who provides us law. But he's not only our lawgiver, he is also our king and judge. And of course, there you have the three areas of government that we find, the three branches, if you will, of that we do find in the Constitution. Interesting, no one credited Yahweh with those anywhere, talking about the framers. But they had that right. There are three branches of government, the judicial, the legislative, and the executive. But we first need to recognize who's our king, our judge, and lawgiver. Now, with that in mind, with him as king, we don't need presidents. We don't need other smaller kings. He is our king. With Isaiah 33:22 in mind, he is our lawgiver. And therefore, we don't need little legislators. We don't need senators and representatives. Representatives, by the way, not of Yahweh. Nowhere was it stated they were to represent Yahweh, as is required in the scriptures. They, quote-unquote, represent the people. It's a very humanistic, if you start really examining it with that in mind, it's a very humanistic. It created a government of, by, and for the people, rather than a government of, by, and for Yahweh, as we find in the 17th century colonial Puritan American. But he is our judge, but he does require on a societal basis for us to have judges. I believe that is, you want to talk about limited government. Let's go back to Yahweh's. If people really want limited government, let's go back to Yahweh's. You don't need presidents. You don't need legislators. You don't need the House of Representatives. You don't need all the bureaucracy that goes with that. But we do need judges. And in order to have judges who represent Yahweh, we must have judges who represent his law. And if we're going to have judges who represent his law, we've got to have judges who know his law. And our people simply do not know his law. And so it needs to be set up on a very limited basis, recognizing God as our ultimate judge, Yahweh as our lawgiver, and Yahweh as our king, and start preparing now for people to know the law well enough to someday fulfill even what Paul very clearly told the Christians that they need to do: avoid the judicial systems of the heathen and the ungodly, and set up your own. And we can start even doing some of that and getting some good practice in our smaller communities and start dealing with these problems, you know, within a community of Christians the way that God intends us to. So, not sure if that answers your question, Gus, or not, but that's at least what came to mind when you asked it.
Well, it certainly pretty much does answer the question. As a follow-up, I've been promoting this book, which explains the difference between common law and the Puritan view of life. And right at the beginning in Chapter 1, it starts off with, "The ideas of the Massachusetts colonists on the matter of law appear very clearly from a resolve of the General Court of the year 1636. The government is there entreated to make a draft of laws, quote, agreeable to the word of God, end quote, to be the fundamental laws of the Commonwealth. This draft is to be presented to the next general court. In the meantime, the magistrates are to proceed in the courts to determine all causes according to the laws then established, the early laws of the general court, and where there is no law, quote, as near the law of God as they can," end quote. "The council is also empowered to make orders for the general conduct of business which is not yet covered by any law, and herein to apply its best discretion according to the rule of God's word." Now, sounds like they started off pretty accurate. Where did they mess up?
Yeah, let me actually read to you. This you'll find on page 54 of the of the complete book. Let me actually read you a portion of the Fundamental Agreement of the Colony of New Haven, Connecticut, 1639. It's not too long. It's a paragraph here, but I think you'll be thrilled with it if you haven't ever heard it before, speaking not only to you, Gus, but, of course, the whole audience. Here's how it begins. Agreement. We all agree that the Scriptures hold forth a perfect rule for the direction of government of all men in duties which they are to perform to God and to man. Wonder where they got that idea of a perfect rule. That came from Psalms 19:7. They had it right. They understood that. Going on, in all duties which they are to perform to God and to man, as well as families and commonwealth, as in matters of the church, so likewise in all public officers which concern civil order. See, we're not just confining this to the four walls of the church building. They're talking all society here, and government in particular. So likewise in all public officers which concern civil order, as choice of magistrates and officers, making and repealing laws, dividing allotments of inheritance, and all things of like nature, we will, all of us, be ordered by the rules which the Scriptures hold forth. And we agree that such persons may be entrusted with such matters of government as are described in Exodus 18:21, Deuteronomy 1:13, with Deuteronomy 17:15, and 1 Corinthians 6:1-7, which I just referenced as far as Paul talking about setting up courts, ecclesiastical courts, under the headship of the churches for civil society. And by the way, those are 4 of the four of the primary principal passages that provide the biblical qualifications for civil leadership that were cast out with the Christian test oaths as per Article 6. So what a thrilling document. In fact, Alexis de Tocqueville, you often hear him referenced, and a lot of people think that he's often referring to the late 18th century and the Constitution, when he refers more often than not back to this very document. And in fact, I'll quote a little bit of his here too. I don't have the page number to give you. It's actually on page 55 of my book, but I won't. It's documented in the back, so I won't give you the page number out of his book. But he says, listen to this. He says, among these documents, talking about the documents of early America, among these documents, we shall notice as especially characteristic the code of laws promulgated by the little state of Connecticut. He uses the year 1650. They did similar then. The legislators of Connecticut begin with the penal laws, and then later he says they borrow their provisions from the text of Holy Writ. Now watch this. A quote within a quote, he's the right quoting from their document, whosoever shall worship any other god than the Lord, or Yahweh as we understand it, says the preamble of the code. What code? The Fundamental Agreement of the Colony of New Haven. So they quote the First Commandment, unlike the Amendment 1 of our Constitution. He says, surely, he goes on, shall surely be put to death. End of quote. Boy, would that be popular today. And then he says, this is followed by 10 or 12 enactments of the same kind, copied verbatim from the books of Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy. Blasphemy, sorcery, adultery, and rape were punished with death. Now, in a paragraph just before that, he says, nothing can be more curious and at the same time more instructive, now listen to this, than the legislation of that period. It is there that the solution of the great social problem which the United States now presents to the world is to be found. Not in the churches, not in the Christianity, but in the laws, the penal laws such places as the Colony of New Haven, who just simply repeated God's penal laws. All of that and more is found, again, in at least the bigger book, and some of that in the primer as well. So, yeah, everybody today is pointing back, man, we got to go back to the Constitution. We got to go back to what those guys had in mind in Philadelphia, God forbid. No, we need to be pointing people back to the true Christian founders of this country. Not that they were perfect, but at least they they established their governments on what was perfect, or at least attempted to, and for the most part did, and go back to the real founders of the Christian founders of this country, and that's those in the early 1600s.
Well, from everything I've been reading, the people that came here from England were looking to get away from the common law. They were trying to get away from that particular tyranny of system, and they developed what they did, as you described, the New Haven and Connecticut constitutions. And then somehow in the around 1700, it looks like they. In this book, it also talks about the people that really wanted that Puritan form of government ended up having to move to New Hampshire and Vermont to get away from the people in New Jersey and New York that were bringing in the English common law, and which is what they were trying to get away from in the first place. So they moved further north to get away and try to reestablish. And our New Hampshire Constitution actually is kind of clean compared to everything you've been talking about in the United States Constitution. It was ratified or accepted by the people of New Hampshire in 1784, and a lot of the corruption that you see in the U.S. Constitution is not in there. But it looked like they had spent a good 70, 80 years bringing back up to power the way it was in England. These people slowly, stepped in and took over prominent positions and inserted their philosophies and rules and laws and whatever, and just took away from what they had already started up.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I'm glad to hear you also distinguish between common law and Christianity, because most constitutionalists, because of Amendment 7, tried to make the common law Christian, and some did then as well. Justice Story certainly did. However, Jefferson, as wrong as he was on most everything else, he had the common law down pat, and that it was not Christian. And I point out in the book that unless Christianity was pronomian at the time that the United States Constitution was ratified, it matters not if Christianity was a part of the common law. The fact that Christianity of that day was already far removed from Yahweh's law and government is demonstrated by the complete absence of biblical citations at the Constitutional Convention in the Constitutional Convention notes in the Federalist Papers. Already shows us how far removed they were. And so even if that Christianity was a part of the common law, that Christianity wasn't really that much Christian, so it really doesn't matter. So you need to be aware of those kind of arguments, because they try to tie the common law into Christianity, and it simply can't be done.
Now, in the Articles of Confederation, they began by saying that the spoil of this country shall be the United States of America. That was part one, after the preamble. And then the very last paragraph of the Articles of Confederation, they begin that paragraph with the words, whereas it has pleased the great governor of the world. Have you ever read that?
I have, yes.
And could you explain how far removed from, where were they heading with that? Were these people Christians, or were they trying to start something new?
Well, as I understand that term and the terms that are found in the Declaration of Independence, let's not forget who wrote that. If there ever was an Antichrist during that day, it was Thomas Jefferson who was principally responsible for the wording in the Declaration of Independence. But the governor of the world, the terms that were used are essentially Masonic terms. And I'm not sure if that's what you were asking about, but even though the Articles of Confederation were not near as bad as what we ended up in the Constitution, the Christianity of those guys was still so polluted. It had already been, Christianity had already, for the most part, been put in the four walls of their church buildings and only let out occasionally for a perhaps a an election sermon. But the very
as
fact
I go ahead.
I was going to say the very fact that the Articles of Confederation, every state put the authority belonged to the people, did not recognize that the authority originated with Yahweh, but instead recognized or stated that the authority originated with the people, tells you, you know, bunches about where even the Articles of Confederation were. And we're basically talking about the same men. It had just evolved even further by the time they got to the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia.
Well, as I mentioned, a lot of the people listening to this call have been actually working on a project to bring back, actually bring forward the de jure government of the United States. And from what you were saying, if you know the difference between lawful and legal, you also know the difference between people and persons and a lot of that, you know, those arguments. And a lot of the listeners are also very familiar with that. And so we've all been studying from various angles how would we restructure our government. And about 2 weeks ago, I read the new constitution for the state of Indiana written by the guys out there that are working on this project. And, it caused me to start looking at the founding documents of the country. And in doing so, I only went back as far as, you know, the Declaration of Independence. And I heard you mention that there were many, many more documents that were actually the founding documents, that these are just the founding documents of the Constitution. But in reading the Articles of Confederation, I was very disturbed at the language that I saw in there, which was carried into the Constitution.
Absolutely.
And I didn't read the Declaration of Independence a couple weeks ago, but now that you mention it, I'm going to go back to that. If we were going to go back and study our history as a country to get back on track and get a really good example of what our government should look like today, what are some of the documents? Like, we have our Constitution. What did they have 300 and 400 years ago? You know, what were they using?
My answer, well, what they were using is what I just read in Massachusetts New Haven Colony's document. They were using the Bible, and therefore I would say forget about going back in history. Not that it's not important and not that we can't glean some things, but don't let that be your principal emphasis to go find out what they were doing. What we need to be doing is we need to be learning God's laws, His commandments, statutes, and judgments. And you've heard me mention those three together time and time again. The reason for that is, first of all, you'll see that Moses uses that all the time in the Torah. He continually is talking about the commandments, statutes, and judgments. Every law, any viable law, is based on those three integral portions. Segments of the law, commandments, statutes, and judgments. Let me give you a quick example. Today, man's law, for example, has traffic laws. One of the commandments in the traffic laws is thou shalt not speed. Now, we take this all for granted, but if we didn't have the statutes that explain the commandment, we wouldn't know the full import or the full intent of the commandment. For example, if we didn't have statutes that explained what speeding was in a school zone or in a business district or on a two- or four-lane highway, so forth and so on, we'd maybe not know what speeding is at all. But we take all that for granted because we've lived with it. But the commandment is explained and elaborated on by its statutes. You know, a lot of churches have the Ten Commandments hanging on their buildings, but they are clueless about the statutes that explain them. And without the judgments to enforce those commandments against speeding, then there's no teeth for those who aren't going to willingly do so on their own. Same with God's laws. For example, thou shalt not commit usury is not one of the Ten Commandments, but it is a statute, and it fits under one of the commandments. Which one would you put it under? Thou shalt not commit usury goes under which commandment?
Stealing.
Thou shalt not steal. So we've got bankers today going free because people only know thou shalt not steal, and they don't know that usury is stealing because we've eliminated the statutes and the judgments from the commandments. and therefore we don't have a viable law. You know, trying to apply God's law in this system, of course, is double tough anyway. But even if we were, without the statutes that explain them particularly and the judgments which enforce them, it would never work. We've got to get back to knowing what statutes fit under which commandments and what judgments need to be carried out. So, I have booklets right now on every one of the commandments. I'm going to be, Lord willing, eventually one volume, but right now it's 10 different booklets as I wrote them as they came, where I explain the commandments through that means, explaining the statutes that explain the statutes and then go to the judgments at the end.
That's awesome. Before I continue, I don't know if Dwayne or Jeff maybe want to ask something, or if not, maybe Gloria or Michelle or someone else.
If anybody has a question for Ted, just start six yourself and hop in, and one question at a time, though, please.
Yeah, this is Gene. How you all doing?
Hi, Gene. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. I really enjoyed your program tonight and the comments, and it sure opened my eyes. As you can imagine, I was piecing everything he was saying together with what we have been trying to do.
Mm.
And maybe that's why it's been kind of forestalled here for a little bit, because we weren't on the right path. So I'm wide open to that, and I think that dovetails in, and we need to get our heads together. And what I'm talking about is the reestablishment of a lawful platform for the people to operate out of, rather than operate out of the public corporate side of things, and give us a place, a shelter to be, so that we can lawfully claim what our status is. And that is, we will not serve two masters. We have one master, and that's it. And so I just wanted to make that comment, and I would like for us to perhaps have a phone conversation, Gus and Dwayne and everybody else that wants to, sometime in between now and Friday, and kind of piece this information together. I'm going to go to the website I wanted to get away from having to read so much stuff. So, but now you've done it.
I've added a lot of you guys here this past couple of weeks. I got a lot of people mad at me, but they're happy at the same time. If you don't want to read, you can listen to the audio series. It's on my website or on Ted's, and that you can even hear the preliminary few four or five that Article 6, the preamble, and the first. Amendment, and even if you just listen to the first three, you'll get a real good picture of the overall thing that Ted's showing us. But if you have time to listen to all 30 of his deeper teachings, I mean to tell you, Gene, it's amazing. And so I would suggest you actually listen to at least part of that first. But yeah, go ahead.
Dwayne, if I might comment on here, because
yeah.
I think it's very important that in either going through the audio series or going through the complete book, and the book, by the way, you know, it's where my heart is at, because God gave me so much more material than is in even the 30-part audio series. But not to be lost in what I do with God's law, in comparing it or contrasting it really with what's found in the Constitution. Don't let the focus be on merely exposing the Constitution, but as the two are juxtaposed to each other. You know, what I hope to accomplish is to highlight, in comparison to this best of all documents that man has ever come up with, quote unquote, to highlight through that the perfection of God's law. And throughout the book, you're going to find just that, where you're going to find a lot of information that if you guys are wanting to try to start setting up these kind of society, small society units, you're going to find pertinent information in that contrast that helps you to see how God's law should be applied instead. You know, for example, this is just, there's many of them, but this is the one that comes to mind. You know, one of the places where the Constitution is absolutely antithetical to Yahweh is Amendment 8, in that they outlawed cruel and unusual punishments. Well, what do you think stoning is?
Yeah.
It's cruel and unusual, at least to man. And yet, in that chapter 17, I show and provide, I think, six different reasons why stoning is perfect and why it is an altogether righteous judgment and why it is so vital to a functioning society, and also how it deters. God chose one of the worst possible punishments as his primary means of capital punishment in order to deter and for a society to continue in a godly fashion. But that's just one of them. I mean, it's amazing how much is found just in that one judgment, and that's something, you know, when we have control of the civil body politic in a more greater way than what you guys are probably talking about right now. You know, that's something that has to be restored. Well, that's just an example of highlighting. Don't get caught up just in exposing the Talmud. More important is seeing the perfection of God's law as the Talmud is exposed through his law, and say, hey, this is something we've got to learn to apply and put to use.
Yeah, that's exactly why it dovetails. You take it to another level. I was studying how honorable men allowed what was supposed to be a perfect beginning slip away and get into the hands of the deceivers, and how easy that was to have been done. But when your eyes are open and you go back and look at it, knowing what you know now, it's pretty easy to see. I can see where they were fooled because it was masterfully done.
Well, let me give you an example. We know that the framers didn't do it right. I mean, once you start studying and comparing it to God's law, it's very clear that they didn't do it right. But there are well-meaning men for a lot of the time since, and particularly right now, that are usually known as consisting of the patriot circles or legal eagles or whatever, that have become experts in either constitutional law or civil law or whatever, and they focus all their attention there when they should be focusing their attention on becoming experts of God's law. And when you become experts of Yahweh's law, then all this other is immediately taken care of when you apply Yahweh's law instead, in place, you know, when it should be. And we've concentrated far too much time putting our emphasis on the wrong thing with good intentions, but there's no answers there. And they just keep finding loopholes or creating more loopholes to get them around whatever you discover in their laws. But if you're pointing men back to Yahweh's laws, then there's no loopholes. There's nothing they can get around. And so that's where the emphasis has got to be, and particularly for our children and grandchildren, so that if it takes that long, they have the means by which to do it right. They're ready and prepared. We're not prepared. If society falls apart tomorrow, we're not prepared. But we do need to be preparing our future posterity to have a chance of doing it right.
If I could step in here for all you folks just for a moment. I did promise Ted I wasn't going to keep more than 2 hours, so I don't want to do that. I want to make sure he understands we're not going to beat him up every time he comes so that he might come back. I do have things I want to propose to Ted. I'll be doing that possibly in the next couple of days. I'm going to try and get a hold of him. To propose that we start perhaps even a committee to try and establish I want to do something. Well, you and I have all done, Gus, Jeff, Gene, and a lot of the other groups around the nation have been working with for years. Bring them all together, and now that we have Ted to expose this such a beautiful level, that perhaps we can use him as what we might call the referee method. But in the meantime, I'm going to work with Ted on that and the issues you and I have all talked on. So I don't want to keep him much longer. Let's take one more question, and we're going to let Ted go.
Me? Okay. I have the question. What I wanted to touch on was, well, I didn't hear too much about the Declaration of Independence as to authority. And, of course, I believe that our laws were really based on the laws from the Bible, but But there again, we broke off and man started to make man-made laws, and that's where the confusion and the chaos started. But what I want to say is, and as to my question, and that's regarding, because we're going to talk about the Fathers for Independence, which started back in 1776, as to the desire and the obligation, which was to follow the laws pertaining to our Lord. And I believe that that's where the Declaration of Independence started to come from, and that's where they started to address the classes of those, the different things pertaining to the man-made laws as to the common laws that we are supposed to truly be following and not the corporation laws. So I think we need to touch on some of those issues as when while we were talking tonight. And I think that other than that, that that's some of the things I want you to, you know, that I think we need to touch more on.
Real quickly, beware of the Declaration of Independence. Again, first of all, it was written by Thomas Jefferson, who was unequivocally an Antichrist.
Well, that's true.
And although he wasn't, he has yet to be identified as being directly involved with any Masonic temple. He had definitely association there, and he has the markings of a man who had that, and the Declaration of Independence does as well. Nature's God and the laws of nature comes right out of the age of reasoning, out of the French Revolution time period, although the framers' form of that wasn't near as bad as what you found in, over in France. But note, God is not identified. We don't have the God of, we don't have the God of the Bible identified there. Neither by his name or by anything that is biblical whatsoever. It's a very Masonic term. The God of nature is a Masonic term, which could be applied to anybody's God. It is not a biblical document in any fashion of the word. Now, it's not near as bad as the Constitution is, but don't be fooled by that language, because it is not biblical language. It is far, far from that. And therefore, the emphasis, forget the Declaration of Independence, forget the Constitution, forget the common laws. Put our attention, if the law of Yahweh is perfect and his judgments are altogether righteous, everything we need is there, and therefore our entire emphasis and our attention needs to be on learning his law so that we can apply it, or at least allow our children to apply it someday.
So if that's the case, and I understand now where you're coming from, so what types of laws are we going to put on the on paper as to for to have some type of an order?
Commandment number one, and all and then place all the statutes that apply to that commandment underneath it and its judgment. Commandment number two, you do the same thing. Commandment number three, that is the basis. Now, then we obviously, whereas we don't need legislators, Yahweh is our lawgiver and our only lawgiver. The laws of what all the laws we need have been made. What we need is to then somebody, once we have the commandments, statutes, and judgments laid out in that fashion, then we need law applicators to our current situation to take his law and say, okay, here's a situation that we have to deal with. The airwaves or whatever it is. You know, there's new situations. But God's case laws, you know, for example, the parapet that was that God's law said had to be around the roof of the houses of Israel. Well, that's a case law. It's a very, very important case law tied in with Lex Talionis, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, so forth and so on. It completely eliminates that law. Forget about studying man's law and insurance laws and the FDA and all of these other bureaucracies. All of that becomes unnecessary when we take God's laws and particularly some of his judgments, particularly Lex Talionis, and say, okay, that eliminates the insurance company, that eliminates FDA, that eliminates HUD, that eliminates every one of those stinking bureaucracies that have tied us down. Forget about studying those things. Study God's law and we eliminate them automatically.
Well, I agree. I think that if we were to do like you said and apply them to the Ten Commandments, I think, oh my gosh, we would be so much better off and a lot happier too.
I agree with you, Michelle. I definitely agree with you. I don't want to. He's exactly right, and that can be a big, big discussion. I don't want to keep Ted.
No.
Ted, if you want to continue, that's up to you. But I want to make sure you understand.
No, I do need to go. Like I said, I've got a health problem with, and I don't sleep well, I'm a. Regardless, I get up at 4, between 4 and 4:20 in the morning. So, and I'm gonna be cogitating on this discussion probably for 2 more hours anyway.
Ted, I want to thank you, Ted. And later on, I'm going to be getting with Gus, and there's a gentleman that I want to you to meet. I would like to introduce him to you, and of course, the rest of the gang. I think you'll be really happy with him, and he's in a maze. He's a god of faith, and I think you'll enjoy listening to him.
One step at a time, Michelle. Just one step at a time. We're going to say goodnight to Ted. Let him go. Thank you very much for your questions, Michelle. But Ted, I want to thank you for being here. I know you got to run, and I want you to understand that I think we've broken some amazing ground here. I am extremely thankful for the Father having sent you to our midst, because I have seen more things even this evening in this call that have opened up my eyes to some wonderful new thoughts, and I want to get together with you and I and just open up some new avenues of what we might do in networking with some of the folks I know and the folks you know. I have some thoughts, so it's possible. It might be part of what I've been called to do as well. So thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you all for allowing me to do so and to share things on my heart. So blessings to all of you. And Dwayne will be talking, of course.
Blessings to you, Ted. Thank you.
Yes. All right. I'll say goodbye then.
Okay. So blessings to you. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
God bless.
Thank you.